In all forms of the perversion of language, there is a mirror reflection of this in the microcosm of the psyche.
And the problem I see with humanity today is we don't truly know ourselves anymore. We have the 9-to-5 job, we have the house, the children, the bills, the television, the hobbies, and the errands that we run every single day, and we eventually begin to believe that this is who we are. You know, but who are we beneath the job title, beneath the status of mother or father, theist or atheist, Republican or Democrat, black or white, man or woman? Who are we? Who are we deep down inside? We don't know, because every time we hear an answer that we don't want to accept about ourselves, we deny it. We'll pass it off and project it onto somebody else and judge them for it. This is repression. And we see what repression can do to us on an individual level, but what about on a collective level of humanity? What happens when the whole world refuses to see what they truly are on the inside?
Welcome to Matakoye Oyasi. This is a call-in show tonight. The area code is 503-231-8187. Get prepared to call in for tonight's show.
Good evening. This is Matakoye Oyasi. This is Jim Craven. My black name is Omahakokia Ipoy, and I'm here with...
Dean Lookinghawk.
And Louis Soa, and a shout-out to Red Willow.
Yes, Red Willow, thank you. And thank you for listening to the program tonight. The theme and the topic, and we welcome your calls. We really want to hear from you. We're doing call-in tonight because next week they're doing fundraising, and we don't really want to have call-ins during fundraising because it gets confusing with numbers and so on. So please, we're welcome. We'd like to hear from you. And tonight's topic we're going to be talking about is perception management, about the tricks of the trade for influencing what we see and how we see it and what we think about what we see and what we conclude.
And how we understand it.
Exactly.
There is a video on Matakoye Oyasi's site on Kebu. Go to the program, and you can look under your Jim Craven's blog or my blog, which is Looking Hawk, to see the video, The Straw Man and the Free Man Explained. That was a snippet you heard when we first started out.
Exactly. And I'd like to lead off, if I may, because we're going to be talking about the tricks of the trade, the tricks that are used in advertising by politicians and whatever, to disarm us. And these are very well known techniques. They're doing stuff now in brain research, for example, that's just out of this world in terms of subliminal manipulation and thought control, thought manipulation, what they call, they actually call perception management. That's the actual term that they use. I'd like to start off with one technique. And I'd like to quote to you, because I'm of an age that I remember Joe McCarthy extremely well, okay? And I remember the damage he did. But I'd like to start off with the first trick, if I may. Quote, Joe McCarthy, February 9th, 1950. I have here in my hand a list of 205 that were known to the Secretary of State as being members of the Communist Party and who nevertheless are still working and shaping policy in the State Department. The next day, February 10th, 1950, last night I discussed communists in the State Department. I stated that I had the names of 57 card-carrying members of the Communist Party. Now, I want to tell the Secretary this. If he wants to call me tonight at the Utah Hotel, I'll be glad to give him the names of those 57 card-carrying members. Then, that was February 10th. Then February 20th, 10 days later. There's a serious question whether I should disclose the names to the Senate. I frankly feel, in view of the number of cases, there are 81 cases, that it would be a mistake to disclose the names on the floor. I should be willing, happy, and eager to go before the committee and give them the names and all the information available. And then finally, 10 more days later, March 1st, 1950, Senator McCarthy had the numbers of names down to one, Owen Lattimore, whom he called the top Russian espionage agent in the country. He said he would stake his entire anti-communist reputation on the accusation. Lattimore denied he was a communist, was indicted for perjury, and found innocent of all charges in 1955. You see the trick. First trick is an odd number. You notice it goes from 205 to 57 to 81 down to 1. One of the tricks that's used is to use percentages, to use odd numbers, and it gives the illusion of precision. And the illusion of precision then gives the illusion of accuracy. So, for example, if I say I'm 8.246 feet tall, that may be precise, but it ain't accurate. This is an old con man's trick to use percentages and to use decimals and so on to give the illusion that they've actually investigated. And the odd number in the psyche prompts someone to think, well, how could they come up with that precise a number unless they had something? The other thing is that's used, and this is what con men use all the time, is most people don't lie easily. Okay, most people, if they tell lies, they have a tell. Okay, it's pretty easy to spot. They do not do it easily, and most people think that others are like themselves. So one of the things that with psychopaths and sociopaths, and also with con men, is they capitalize on this. They look at you with all sincerity, with absolute certainty. Certitude. And people will often think, well, you know, nobody could be that sure of himself unless they had something.
Well, having known a couple of con men that were good at it, I think what they do is they psych themselves up to where they literally cannot believe what they're saying.
True.
Absolutely.
That's how they do it.
That's true. That's why.
And they psych themselves up. They recite it over and over and over till.
Right.
We see this manipulation in the polls and, you know, those types of things too.
Right.
They're always percentage, always using percentages and other things.
I remember, for example, you know, when I came home from the military in 1966, and of course LBJ was my commander in chief. And I remember LBJ over and over and over again, just like Mr. Obama today, professing that the cause in Vietnam was a great cause for democracy and freedom, and we're just those poor people in the South, in that southern country. We declared an independent country out of what was once a whole country. And I remember LBJ with this sincerity talking, don't you understand, our boys are fighting for democracy and freedom and so on. And then I find, for example, this is when the tapes came out, and this is from an Oval Office conversation with the Greek ambassador in 1967. And the ambassador was meeting with LBJ to talk about American interference in Greek affairs right before we engineered a fascist coup in Greece and put the colonels, if anybody remembers this, the Greek colonels who were all a bunch of Nazis, fascists, into power in Greece. And many thousands of people were disappeared and murdered. And I quote to you, quote, listen to me, Mr. Ambassador. F-word your parliament and your constitution. America's an elephant. Cyprus is a flea. Greece is a flea. If these two fleas continue itching the elephant, they may just get whacked by the elephant's trunk. Whack good. We pay a lot of good American dollars to the Greeks, Mr. Ambassador. If your prime minister gives me any talk about democracy, parliament, and constitutions, he, his parliament, and his constitution may not last very long. End quote.
Now, Jim, you do realize that it's 65.7% of all statistics are false.
Yes. And as my father used to say with a smile on his face, you know, son, they've done studies that 97.24% of people who have an inferiority complex and low self-esteem are quite correct in their self-assessment. He would smile. He said, they really are inferior. They have good reasons. They have so low self-esteem. He didn't believe that. He wasn't mocking people with that situation. He was mocking the notion, and he would do that same way.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of the tricks that's used, for example. So when you hear people quoting these polls and they're using these exact numbers, that is one of the classic tricks of rhetoric that is used.
And the reason behind all of this that we're discussing this is that all of that stuff makes us lose our way of who we are, not what we are, what they think we are. It's who we are.
Yes.
Well, probably to go back to something you said a little while ago, in Vietnam, the rhetoric then was that if we didn't stop the communists in Vietnam, they were going to overtake the world. Well, we essentially lost the war, and they did not take over the world. So there was something wrong about the...
Exactly. And you know what we do, for example, on this show? We lead in on this show, and we admit it. We lead on this show with music and so on. And what we're doing is we're framing, okay? You know how you frame a picture, for example? The object of the frame of a picture is to actually highlight what was inside the frame.
Right.
Right? That's the object. The frame, yes. You know, actually highlights what's inside it. Or when you're framing a person for a crime, for example, what you're doing is you're cherry-picking what to include and what to exclude. Okay, the purpose is to manipulate perception and conclusions about what is being perceived. You're manipulating not only what is being perceived, but what you think about what it is that you're perceiving, framing. And that is another common technique that is used. You see, it's like, Dean, give your example with the question, you know, about euthanasia.
Oh, the choosing the dual, they'll always present the dual thing to you. Hmm. How would you vote euthanating elders at the age of 80? Yes or no?
Exactly.
Most people will say, oh, no, I wouldn't vote. I'd vote no, absolutely not.
Wait till 81. Huh?
Well, you see, what they did to you is they manipulated you.
Right.
And if you're living in mind, heart, body, spirit, you would say, don't ever put that in front of me. Ever. All right. Life is precious. But that's the game, getting you to pick one.
Well, we do a whole lot of things that way. Our politics are very heavily Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah.
It's the Democrat or the Republican. Mm-hmm. But that's the way we do a whole lot of things. And that's how you're told to do something. You give a child you want them to pick something. You don't say, what do you want? You say, do you want this or that?
Man has been disconnected from his natural human being. His natural being. So if you are connected as your natural being, you would understand that that's never a game to play. You know, they're always putting you into the straw man effect.
Right.
You're the straw man.
Yeah, when somebody gives me the choice between being hanged, shot, or poisoned, which is Hobson's choice, I think I'm going to hold out for door number four. Thank you very much. And unfortunately, that's what we've got, for example, in our political system. We've got Tweedledee versus Tweedledum and Dumber. And in both cases, the so-called menu of choice, right, that we're handed are handed to us by the backroom boys and girls with the big money folks. And then they come out and tell us how good it's going to be. You see, but it's the very same thing. You know, we've got this. Here we've got Mr. Obama, for example. We talked about this last week. He ran on what? Yes, we can. Change you can believe in, right? This time the people from the grassroots speaks. And who does he appoint? He appoints a long list of characters from the Bush regime that brought us this misery. He keeps Gates in there, who was part of a war built on lies. He's got now the head of the Council of Economic Advisors, Austin Goolsbee, skull and bones, a preppy KKK little club. He's got Larry Summers. He had Geithner. You know, when they say that this is Bush's third term, they're not kidding.
Some people will ask what this has to do with Indian radio or indigenous radio. It has a lot to do with it because we've seen this manipulation happen on the reservations. We've seen the loss of language, land, culture. And now we see the reservation moving into America. Mm-hmm. We see the manipulation of all American people, losing their rights, losing their land, losing their houses, losing their possessions, losing everything they worked for, taking away that natural human being.
You mean with hard work we won't succeed necessarily?
Yeah, I don't know what's hard work. I think that if we start thinking and being of mind, heart, body, spirit, and thinking of our people, our Teoshpe, our communities, know who we are, not what we are.
Right.
See, we settle for the what. Oh, you're a lawyer? And we're satisfied with that superficial answer.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And what are you?
It's
who are you?
Your house, your car, what do you have,
right.
Not who you are.
How are you connected? You know? Not what you're connected with. Who are you?
Yeah, I mean, like the singles bar. What's the first question in a singles bar before, you know, what's your sign or do you have any nasty STDs? The first question is, what do you do? Okay. And if you say, well, I'm a good person, but I'm unemployed right now due to the crisis in capitalism, so I'm unemployed. So I do a little writing. I help the poor, because I want to use my time wise. It's going to be a short conversation in that place, isn't it? What do you do? And that's how we label everyone.
Exactly.
In Asia, for example, particularly in Japan, when you greet someone, for example, in the business world, the first thing you do is you hand the business card with both hands. Okay? Not with one hand. With one hand, it's rude. You hand the business card with both hands, right? Mm-hmm. And the person to whom you're handing it, if that person's Japanese, will look at the title, right? And make an immediate judgment whether they bow 15 degrees or 30 degrees. 15 degrees is for someone below you or your equal. 30 degrees is for someone above you. And so they will look at the card and make it, based on the title, make an instant judgment, right, about your standing. Mm-hmm. And your standing relative to them, based on a title alone.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And this is part of the whole thing.
That's what entitlement does.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's made our own people fight for entitlement, struggling for entitlement.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Another technique that's used is called, appeal to authority. They bring out all these sports stars who swear up and down that they love this particular product. But you see, because someone's an authority doesn't make their opinion evidence. Their opinion may be worth listening to more, but it doesn't make it evidence. Because Einstein, for example, one of the greatest physicists that ever lived, was wrong about certain things in physics. So the greatest, authority in a given area can be wrong even in their own area. The fact that they're an authority doesn't make their opinion evidence. But what's interesting is in Western systems of law, but not in indigenous law, we don't have expert witnesses. Okay, there's no such creature as an expert witness in an Aboriginal court for that very reason. Okay, the person's evidence is exactly that, not their opinion. What evidence, reason and so on in law can you bring to bear? But in a Western court, you have dueling expert witnesses, each paid to give the theory of the case.
That's because an expert is a drip under pressure.
Yeah, and paid drip under pay. Yeah. Do we have anybody calling in? Jeff?
Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. Jim Craven.
Yes, sir.
An important public intellectual who needs a wider audience. I have a word that's kind of funny. I have something to say, but this is kind of funny because you just mentioned it. I call them, if you will, former perts, because they are ex-perts. Once upon a time, they were perts.
Very good.
Before that, they were spurts.
don't get me started. But the fascinating part, I think, that you brought up that's so important. By the way, when you speak body, mind, spirit, nothing could be truer. And I think people need to understand this. I speak as an expert, a former pert witness to this truth. I have, since February, I have been actively swimming 1 to 3 miles a week. I've been bicycling 30 to 100 miles a week. And I will not permit my body, mind, spirit to get out of line. Mm-hmm. And this has all been to the good, because I am, after all, an HIV/AIDS patient who suffered a stroke 12 years ago.
Whoa.
These things are just in the past, and I'm looking strictly forward from this moment forward. But the real thing that I called about, Jim and friends, is that there is an important distinction, and you pointed it out very clearly. Often I've heard that, European locals, if you will, are often will ask you, rather than in America where you say, what do you do? They will simply say, how do you do? And there's a world of difference between that.
Right.
Not only are you not what you do, you are not what's in your pocketbook or bank account.
Correct.
And even more importantly, Jim, I hope you'll get this, because this is an important truth that I've been learning over time. You, not only are you what you eat, we know that to be an absolute fact, you are what you eat,
mm-hmm.
you are also what you pay attention to.
That's very mm-hmm. true.
And that's where we as people need to change our whole thinking and come to the at-one-ment, the atonement, the at-one-ment that is about to be. And I thank you so much for allowing me to comment on your call.
Thanks so much, Jeff, and thanks for calling, and we hope to keep hearing from you, and hope you stay well, okay?
We have the same understanding that when you ask somebody, how are you? You're asking them, how are you in mind, heart, body, and spirit. The longest journey we'll ever travel is from our heads to our hearts, and our hearts being the final destination of where we move from, with all four collective moving forward.
And you are listening to Matakeyasi on KBO FM in Portland, Oregon, here with myself, Lewis, and
Jim Craven,
Dan Looking Hawk.
Thank you for listening to Matakeyasi.
And call in.
And please call in, and the number that you can call in is 503-231-8187. Okay, thank you so much, KBOF FM, 90.7 FM, Portland. Thank you so much for calling in and listening. And we're talking about the techniques, some of the research also that's going on right now, especially in brain science. And Charlie Rose did a whole series on the brain, which was very, very enlightening. And what they're able to do with MRI imaging now and so on in terms of seeing which parts of the brain involuntarily light up in response to certain stimuli. And they're getting into this in a very, very heavy way, because not only in terms of thought control, but what they call thought identification, okay, which is basically, I'll give you a quick example of how that works. They've done experiments where they'll get someone and that person will be in a room wired up, okay, and they'll show them a series of images, okay, and they're pictures, and there's 10 of them randomly generated, okay, and what they're doing is registering the reactions in the brain, specifically which parts of the brain light up, and specifically which neurotransmitters, which neurochemicals, right, are involved in it, and then they'll go back, and what they'll do then is they'll again, randomly generate those pictures, and based on the MRI imaging, okay, they will then correlate that with what picture that person was likely seeing. And one of the things that they found out is, for example, people have different experiences, okay, let's say with a hammer. But the basic pattern, okay, the basic synaptic pattern, which parts light up and which neural connections, you know, are made, is basically the same for most people, except for somebody maybe have hit the thumb with a hammer, and so there'll be some other, you know, parts of the brain that also light up because of the unique experience that they had with a hammer. But most people, right, will their brains will show basically the same imaging pattern for when they see a hammer. And so what they'll do then is they record all of this, and then they'll play it back, and they'll say, well, this brain pattern must be associated with a hammer. And again, it's a random program, so there's no way you can fix it. And what they're doing now is, for example, doing this MRI imaging so that they can literally read minds from a distance, from a remote, mm-hmm. based on MRI patterns. Mm-hmm. And this has some very, very frightening implications. And for people, for example, who say, well, yeah, but, you know, we've got Obama in, and that's why we got to keep going, and, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, folks, but Mr. Obama just the other day defended his right to order a summary execution of an American citizen without trial and without due process because that person's allegedly a terrorist and outside this country. What's wrong with this picture, you see? And I don't anybody who would do that, I don't trust them to protect a whole lot of civil liberties. And I'm very worried about the imaging and the new research and the technology that's developing along these lines.
And you brought up a point, you know, if we stop living in our heads, they can't read us.
That's true.
If we move from our center, mind, heart, body, spirit, they can't see us. And they can't kill what they can't see. You know?
And that's the problem.
It's when we move from our centers that we start seeing all this stuff as noise and clutter. We start seeing what's real, connected, and related. And all this other stuff is nonsense.
Exactly.
It's control.
And you know, these days, with what they can do with Photoshop, for example, they used to say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Not after Photoshop, it's not. Okay? I mean, I can, with a little creativity with Photoshop, I can put His Holiness the Pope there in even more compromising positions than he probably already is in. Okay, with a little creativity.
That's the illusion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so this is why it's more important than ever, not only to have alternative radio to listen to in addition to the so-called mainstream stuff, but the other thing is you really have to fight to try to find out what the truth is, because there's, You know, so much smoke and mirrors. And there's so many very sophisticated techniques these days, right, for mind and perception manipulation and control.
Some are not so technical.
That's true.
Such as, if you repeat something often enough, it becomes truth. And that one's been known a long time, and it works.
That's right.
Well, they concentrate on the individualism, the self. Even affliction, addiction, to healing is helping, acting as Indians and stepping up and voting with our feet. If most people who are afflicted, addicted to alcohol, drugs, if they would stop living in self and go help their people, mm-hmm. their communities, mm-hmm. that's where we heal.
We have a call.
We have a call. Sean?
Good evening.
Good evening.
I wanted to run this by you guys and get your reaction. It seems to me ultimate power is the ability to contradict yourself at the drop of a hat, to be totally inconsistent. And I think indigenous people especially are well acquainted with that in terms of the countless broken treaties. And it seems that Mr. and Mrs. America, with the Wall Street bailout, are becoming acquainted with what it means to deal with people who speak with forked tongues, who contradict themselves at the drop of a hat and who are totally inconsistent. Much has been talked about the opportunity cost, the trillions of dollars in taxpayer money and guarantees, how that money could have been spent, cancer research, rebuilding inner cities, rebuilding, you know, dealing with poverty infrastructure. But very little is talked about in terms of the contradiction, the fact that poor people in this country have been smashed over the head for the last 30 years with this ideological hammer called the science of free markets. And now this so-called science of economics, this free market science, has been completely contradicted themselves. And they look at us and smile and say, well, we don't want to do that now. We smashed you with this, but we're not going to suffer. We're not going to pay for our own contradictions, our own inconsistencies. I wonder if you guys have any reaction to any of that.
First of all, you started off with absolute power. Okay, their power is an illusion. It's a complete illusion. Power is up in the Wakions, up in those thunder beings, the thunder, the wind, the rain, the water. That's where power's at.
You can't just usurp power easily. You got to earn power. But people, talk a little bit about power. That's a good subject.
I'll tell you where part of their power comes from. And part of their power comes from not by insulating themselves from any transparency or accountability. And let me illustrate what I mean. When people find out, for example, I'm an economist by training, they'll start with the latest bumper sticker slogan, well, don't you think we ought to let markets do what markets do? And they say it in this really assured, this really strong voice, right? And I'll smile at them and say, okay, I'm down with that. But first, I want you to please tell me the seven things that markets do and the order in which they do them. And they'll say, well, what do you mean? I said, you just advanced a theory. It's called neoclassical theory. Okay. And you said, let free markets do what free markets do. They can do it better than command or government or whatever. Okay, cool. Tell me the seven things, according to your theory, that markets do and the order in which they do them. And there'd be a dead silence. I said, well, why? Because if you don't even know that, you don't know enough to be worth my time. Okay? Because, you know, or I'll say to them, free markets, okay. Would you tell me the six fundamental conditions of a free market? Without which you have no free market. There are six fundamental conditions according to Pareto optimality, named after a dude named Vilfredo Pareto, who was an Italian economist, sociologist, and a lover of Mussolini. And so there are six fundamental conditions, right, to have a free market, right? No buyer or seller is large enough to affect market price, freedom of entry and exit, homogeneous product, perfect factor mobility, perfect information, zero transactions cost, okay? And so I'll say this to them. Well, tell me the six fundamental conditions for the existence of a free market, and there'll be a dead silence. So my point is, the way you take a power, before I went into the army, I had this teacher. He was a great human being, And I was thrown out of high school. I never finished high school because I got into it with a vice principal who truly deserved it, I might add. And this gentleman handed me Arnold Rose's The Negro in America. And in it he wrote, he said, there are five questions I want you to think about. When you answer the first three, you'll be led to the next two. And those questions were, who are the rulers and who are the ruled? And in which class am I? And he said, once you answer those questions, you'll be led to the next two. How do the rulers rule? How do we take them out of power? And those five questions have in many ways guided my life since 1963, when I went into the U.S. Army. And those are the profound. But these people have power, partly because of our own ignorance, but partly because they keep themselves, just like Obama won't have press conferences. Have you ever seen him lately in these press conferences? He looks like a deer in the headlights. He looks just like George, because this is a guy who practices speeches 6, 7, 8 days. And somebody who practices the same speech over 6 or 7 days, there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Sean, do you hear anything you was listening for, or you got some more questions?
Oh, well, I guess the last thing would be, the indigenous, do I understand correctly, the indigenous were once promised what is now the state of Oklahoma?
yes.
Among
before
other things.
Oklahoma land rush.
Well, it seems like after World War II, after hundreds of thousands of working class men literally spilled their guts all over planet Earth to protect this country, to protect so-called democracy, when they got back, they were promised implicitly a decent life, a decent middle-class life. It might not have been written down like the treaties were written down with the indigenous, but I think there was an unwritten contract that if people played by the rules, didn't break the law, they worked hard, they took care of their families, they would be entitled to a good life. And right now it's looking like it's looking just as flimsy and worthless as the treaties that the indigenous signed with.
This is what we've been saying.
We've been saying all along.
Yeah.
We're the canary in the mine. Today it's us, tomorrow it's you.
Yep.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks for calling in, Sean.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Good evening. Welcome back to Mitakue Oyasi. This is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland. And you're listening here. My name is Jim Craven. And we're here with
Dean Lookinghawk.
Louis Soa.
And thank you so much for listening. And we have a call. Steve.
Hello.
Hello.
You guys are such a breath of fresh air.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
I can't wait every week for it to, for you guys to speak some wisdom.
We try.
Yeah, you guys are so awake. I call it awake or asleep. I don't know if that's right, too. But it's like I can't believe that so many people don't get it. And the knowledge that I've learned from you guys, or just the information, has been so helpful because I've been this way probably since I was 18. It's like difficult to converse with people. So when I hear you guys talk about this stuff, it's like, oh my God, somebody actually knows this.
Yes, you're not alone, Steve.
And I'm not indigenous, but I've felt this way all my life. I used to tell my mom, like,
well, we're related.
Oh, I see.
Yes, we're related. That's what this show is about.
And everyone was indigenous once.
Your show means we're all related.
We really mean that. We really mean that.
You
see? And as I said, we're not here doing identity politics. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand totally.
We're not doing that at all. We're here to reach out and to explore our common humanity and our common bonds and our common, you know, enemies. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. And ignorance, and there's some nasty forces in the world that don't mean you well, they don't mean us well. And, you know, we're trying to speak truth to power, and we're trying to let folks like yourself know that, yes, you're not alone. There's a whole bunch of people.
I wrote down our little bulletin board. We live way out in the country, but there's a lady that's always sharing her daily word or something with us every once in a while. And so I wrote down the bulletin board, the longest journey you're going to take is from your heart to your head. I mean, from your head to your heart.
Right. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Good for you.
That is so profound. It's so true.
It's very true.
And the whole thing about it's who you are.
Absolutely.
You guys could not say it any better. And with all the information that you give out, it should be easy for people to follow the roadmap on you guys' wisdom. And I think I want to thank you so much for everything, and I will go off the air now.
Thanks, right. Steve, and thanks for listening, and please call in again, and hope you can drop down and say hello to us sometime. We'd like all the listeners, if you want, we're down here. You're more than welcome to come down and talk with us and shoot the bull with us. And
we were talking on a break about power, the illusion of power. Have you ever seen lightning fail? Have you ever seen an earthquake fail? Have you ever seen a volcano fail? That's power. Have you ever seen governmental illusion of power fail? Because it's not power. It's just an illusion. It's by trial and error, and they're playing with us.
Plato said it a long time ago, those who seek power are invariably the least fit to hold and to wield it. It takes a certain amount of real narcissism and megalomania and just outright chutzpah to parachute down on a bunch of people and self-proclaim oneself a leader, never having any mandate whatsoever from those you're purporting to lead. You know, like people who get a management degree, and you, only in America, can you get, never having been anywhere in your life, get a management degree and parachute into some company and be made a, quote, instant boss over old workers who've been there for 30 and 40 years because you've got some crummy degree, and never having, you know, walking in and saying, I'm your new leader. Leadership is determined by those who are led. The people who are supposedly being led, they're the ones who will credential who the true leaders are.
Leadership is fellowship.
Right.
I have had some experience of being a, quote, manager in high-tech companies, and my statement the first time I was a manager thereof was to the people that supposedly worked for me, as I feel like I work for them because my job is to make sure that they can do well. If they do well, I look good. So my job is to make sure they have all the tools and education or whatever it is to take to do well. So yep. I always consider that I work for them, not that they're working for me.
Yep, your people make you the leader.
That's right. And along the lines, one more trick, because when we're talking also about bags of tricks that are used for thought control and perception control, and I would be remiss if I didn't talk for one moment about what's called cognitive dissonance. Now, cognitive means knowing, from the Latin cogicos, knowing. Dissonance means disharmony. So when there's a contradiction between fact and belief, or a contradiction between fact and emotion, like interests, or a contradiction between belief and emotion, something's got to give. So, for example, the belief is, well, America's number one in respect for democracy, human rights, yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's the belief. But then there are facts. Facts you can't get around of a long list of very ugly dictatorships that no American would ever want to live under, that will have been installed, maintained, perpetuated, promoted, armed, okay, given aid and comfort. There's a contradiction between the long list of facts and the belief. Now, some people are capable of looking at facts and changing their beliefs. But more often than not, many people will deny the facts or cherry-pick the facts or seek out the sources and facts that conform and confirm their already existing beliefs, because they'll believe that their belief system is theirs, it's true, it's got to be true, and it's non-negotiable. The same thing with emotions. You know, the definition of a conservative is a liberal that's been mugged, okay? And the definition of a liberal is a conservative that's been downsized and outsourced. It's amazing when your emotions and interests change how your beliefs get challenged.
Well, see, I don't agree with the word beliefs. That's the problem right there. Belief is simply not to think at all. You just simply believe. Mm-hmm. So they love that word.
That's right.
It's a great manipulative
word. Believe it, though. I believe it. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but...
just absolute.
I believe. What's the basis of it? Well, I just believe it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Is your belief subject to test by facts? Well, depends.
You see? What are the facts?
Yeah. Well, if long as the facts that fit my belief, yeah, I'm willing to listen. Okay, so what you'll find is, and this is another thing that people know, and this is a form of narcissism, and this is why we're also partly culpable ourselves, is I can count on my four-fingered hand how many people I've met who read outside of their ideological paradigm. You know, you can count it. How many people who are religious have even read their own holy book, let alone the holy books of other faiths? But yet they'll swear up and down that not only is their faith the truth, but their denomination of that faith. Christianity has 33,000 denominations. Most of them have it in for the others. And each one will tell you, well, but we've got the truth. Okay, those other people just don't know how to read the Bible right. You see? And so we have also please to tune in tonight at 7 o'clock for a live broadcast. It's the only scheduled debate between the Oregon candidates for governor, Chris No Free Fall Shot Dudley, and Dr. John Kitzhaber. Okay, and also remember that the membership drive starts tomorrow. Pledge well and pledge from your heart. We thank you so much for your support. And this is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. You're listening to Metakui Oyasi with Jim Craven and
Dane Luckinghawk
and Louis Sowa. And on your what you just read, which leads back to something, maybe that's where you're going, choices. It says the two candidates running for governor, they are not the only two candidates running for governor.
Correct.
However, do listen, but realize that there are other candidates.
There are. There are. And so, and we're talking again about perception management and our own responsibility, right? And our own responsibility in not being robots and not... And we all got opinions and ideas and whatever.
Except mine are right.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, just like my religion, it's the only one. What else could it be? And so that's one of the things that they're counting on. This is why, for example, Dick Morris talked about triangulation. Bill Clinton was a master of it. And the idea is this: if you only have 48% of the population of the potential electorate voting. Okay, and you've got a two-party, let's say you've even two and three parties. Let's say two parties. And let's say somebody gets 50% of the vote. 50% of 48% is 24% of the potential electorate. Now you've got the single issue stuff. People on their own pet single issues. And the idea then is called triangulating. You know how the apex of a pyramid stands above the middle of the left and the right? So what they'll do is appear to be in the middle up there, feeding single issues to each side. So for the left, they'll give the Greens, the gays, right, the whole bit, their little single issues. And on the right, they'll the tax cuts and deregulation and whatever.
And the religious stuff,
abortion, pro-choice. You see, both parties do it. And they keep these people focused on their own single issues. And so that people will say, well, you know, their position on this other stuff makes my stomach turn. But they seem to be righteous on my particular pet issue, right. So I'm going to vote.
Yes, and people will say that even.
Exactly. We have a call.
No.
No? Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, we thank you all for calling in. And again, you're listening to KBOO Radio 90.7 FM in Portland. This is Metakui Oyasi, and I'm here with Jim Craven.
And Louis Sowa.
Dane Luckinghawk.
And any more calls coming in? No? Okay. Well, we'll just keep on a roll then. And we're talking about perception management
and power and how
we surrender. You know, there for Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, which is actually a chess game, by the way, check and checkmate in 18 moves. And each character is a chess piece and so on. And there's a part in Humpty Dumpty where Humpty Dumpty says, "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." "The question is," said Alice, "whether one can make a word mean so many different things." "The question is," Humpty Dumpty said, "which is to be master, that's all."
Humpty was pushed.
With power comes the power to define. Truth and lie, moral and immoral, right and wrong, democracy and tyranny, you see? And this is what they want. They want the power to define. And the way they appropriate and keep that power to define, we have a call coming in, is by insulating themselves from any real close-up examination of who and what they really are and how ill-prepared actually they truly are. When you look at the resumes of some of these individuals, it's absolutely slim and pathetic. We got a call, Kurt? Aaron.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Fine. How you doing?
How are you?
I love talking to you. I love hearing you on the radio. I'm terribly sorry you won't be on next week for the pledge drive. I hope it doesn't last terribly long.
Well, we will be, but it'll be interrupted.
Will we be?
Oh, I see. Oh, that's good then.
Yeah, I think we'll be on, hopefully.
Your voice does it for me. You know.
Thank you.
Call in and make a pledge there, and keep us on.
Yeah,
anyway,
right.
Did you hear what happened today?
Huh.
Okay, in Latin American countries, the people there are so much braver than we are here. In today's world, Ecuador's president cut back the bennies of all the cops in the land. All the cops are in revolt against him. So then he turns to the people, says, oh, help me, help me, help me. He goes out there, says, shoot me, cops, if you want to shoot me. The people turn their backs on him. What a surprise. And then he called in the military.
Mm.
So, you know, in all these little countries, the people there, I just marvel at their I don't know, they take things into their own hands, they go in the streets and they take over their countries and they say, this is the way it's going to be. We are the people. You guys are working for us. We don't have it here. What is wrong with us? I don't mean to include you, obviously.
Well, you know,
I mean to include the majority of TV watching Americans that just sit on their Botox and just watch TV and let the world pass them by.
Well, one thing is we, as Americans, mostly have more things than people in poor countries, and people want to hang on to those things.
True.
And that's part of it. That isn't all of it, but that's part of it, I think.
And with, you know, with the wealth, which is grossly unevenly distributed, I might add,
yeah,
you have all sorts of new opiates that are being offered, not just the traditional ones of religion and so on that Marx talked about,
right,
there's all sorts of opiates available these days.
Oh, of course. Okay.
And very seductive and very alluring, and they wear very sophisticated masks, and they've been very carefully designed.
And this is not just by accident.
That's
it's
right.
All been planned out for hundreds of years,
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a coincidence that 2% of the people in this country own 98% of it.
Yep.
Is that, I mean, just think about those. It cannot be an accident. There cannot be something that says, oh, yes, this whole thing has been a humongous coincidence. You know, the wealthier just keep getting wealthier. They get wealthier on the backs of all the rest of us.
Well,
that's the truth.
We can't turn the tables by starting to ignore them. It takes one to know one.
I know. I heard you say that before, and I like that idea. But I think they're more craven than that. You know, they're more obdurate than that. They're not gonna care about us turning our backs on them. It's like a bully, you know.
Okay.
If some man comes in and tries to beat me up, if I just turn my back on him, that's not gonna do anything.
Got you.
You know? I don't know. We have to organize. I really believe
Well, that's
that.
What I say when I say that. I say organize and ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Know your communities,
I see.
Know your families, know your neighbors, know your people.
From an indigenous standpoint, you can't own anything.
Right. Oh,
and that's
know
part
that.
Of the problem.
I wish that were true. I don't think we have it in us.
It could be, but anyway, we need to wrap up here. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much, Aaron, for listening.
I don't feel alone when you're there.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We want to know that you're there, too. It helps us, too. Thank you so much. And you've been listening to KBOO Radio 90.7 FM in Portland. This is Mitakyu Eoyasi with Jim Craven and
Dean Looking Hawk,
Louis Sowa.
And we're going to leave you, and thank you for your support. And now we're going to leave you with Heroes and Survivor by my friend